Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, live from Los Angeles. Finally, I could say the rain is gone. Not sure how it is on the East Coast. Well, it's time to bring on our favorite person on the East Coast with cannabis healing, Paxton Quigley. Good morning.
Well, hello there, and hello to all of our cannabis healing listeners. Folks, here's some recent cannabis news. A report was just released on cannabis industry employment figures. It literally counted, state by legal state, the number of full-time cannabis-related jobs. And the total showed there are more than 211,000 cannabis jobs in the USA. This job number reflects a 21% increase in 2018. Now, not surprising, California leads the country in cannabis-related employment with some 67,000 jobs. Also this week, a Quinnipiac University poll showed that 60% of U.S. adults support legalizing recreational marijuana and 93% support medical marijuana. Those numbers are much higher among millennials. Now, 63% of Americans also believe that people with simple marijuana arrests that are on their records should be allowed to have them expunged. And finally, this week, Meghan McCain, the daughter of the late Senator John McCain, she said that medical cannabis could have potentially extended his life. She said, "Going through what I went through last year, I am so angry that there is such a stigma attached to cannabis." And now, folks, I'd like to introduce today's guest, Dr. Michael Verbora, and he is going to talk about the role that cannabis can play in treating depression. Dr. Verbora is a member of the Canadian Consortium for the Investigation of Cannabinoids. Dr. Verbora, welcome to Cannabis Healing. How are you?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Good. Now, want to get you started right away. I understand that cannabis research on depression is limited, but can you explain to our listeners just what has been concluded, if anything, about the relationship between cannabis and depression?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So to date, we have studies out there mostly in animal models and what we call basic science studies. And what we've seen is that the endocannabinoid system, the system where cannabis works, is tightly controlled and also potentially regulates what we call the serotonin system in the body. And a lot of people will think of serotonin as the happy molecule. And so a lot of the medications that we use to treat depression work by changing the amount of serotonin that's available for the brain to utilize. And so there's a tight, interesting relationship between serotonin and cannabinoids. It's a bit of a chicken and an egg. We don't know how they work together or which one may regulate the other, or if it's a little bit of both ways. When it comes to clinical research, unfortunately, because of all the legalities around poor access to cannabis for research, we're still, you know, very far behind in doing clinical research. Now, there is an interesting study out in the European Journal of Internal Medicine, and that had a study on about 3,000 patients with cancer. And what was really interesting to me when I was glancing through this journal, they looked at what happened to patients with cancer who used medical cannabis, and specifically they reported on a bunch of symptoms. And when it came to depression and anxiety, they lumped them together, but what they found was that over 80% of patients would report an improvement in anxiety and depression. So while the evidence is still limited, there is some science out there to support its use for depression.
Okay, now I heard something else that also, cannabis consumption, it can alleviate depression, but in other people, it brings it on. Why is that?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, and I think we don't 100% know If some people who use cannabis are turning to it because they're already depressed, or if they're turning to cannabis for other reasons, and then it leads to depression. Again, this is chicken and egg thing. And so there are studies done in New Zealand on thousands and thousands of young people where they followed them for 20 years, and they found that a lot of people who were using cannabis had depression and anxiety later in life. Unfortunately, it's really hard to prove that it's a cause and an effect because there's so many other issues that it could be. It could be just the act of smoking it. It could be the combination with other drugs like alcohol or tobacco. And so it's really hard to prove one way or another. Right now, there is some data that says if you use cannabis early in life and you use a lot of it and it's smoked, there's an association potentially, and it's marginal, meaning very small, increase in depression and anxiety later in life. So again, it's really hard to say that it causes it, but there's an association.
Now, what if, because you were talking about smoking, what if you would use maybe a pill that had marijuana in it or used an extract? Would that, do you think, make any difference, or don't you know?
So I don't know because we don't have the studies on that yet, but I would postulate that the risk would be less. When you inhale cannabis and you consume a lot of it, it really flips the receptors in the brain rather rapidly. And so going from a certain state to another state rather rapidly poses a higher risk for, let's say, addiction or dependence, which is still small overall for cannabis. But when you take something like a tincture or an oil, it slowly, gradually sets in, and so it slowly activates the receptors. And so in that type of approach, I would suspect that the risk would be slightly decreased, but we'd have to study it and compare it.
I see. Now, I know that you've done some studies. Can you give us some examples? Are you testing on human subjects? And if so, how does that process work?
Yeah, so I work out of Toronto in a clinic known as the Cannabo Medical Clinic, which is owned and operated by Aleafia Health, which is a medical cannabis company in Canada. And we've treated over 50,000 patients now with medical cannabis, and patients consent to the collection of their medical information, and then we will do observational studies on it. And to date, we've done a number of them, but the biggest one was one we just published maybe a month ago in a peer-reviewed cannabinoid journal. And what was really interesting about this one is that we found that one out of every two patients who came to us after about 6 months were able to stop their anti-anxiety medications or their sedatives such as Xanax or clonazepam or lorazepam. So one out of two is really remarkable, especially when the opioid crisis gets a lot of airtime, and a lot of people know about that, but they don't realize that behind the opioids is this benzodiazepine addiction and dependence. And so if cannabis can be a safer alternative, it poses a great opportunity to really help people get away from that addictive substance. And in addition to that study, we're also doing a sleep study where we're analyzing what happens to patients when they use cannabis in terms of their sleep scores, their pain scores, their quality of life. And we're also going to measure, well, what happens to their pharmaceuticals? There's a lot of what we call Z drugs out there, Zolpidem or Zolpidem. And those also work like those Xanax or clonazepam pills, so they're addictive. And my goal as a physician is to try to get patients off some of those, because some of the new data coming out shows that those drugs may be associated with things like dementia. And so as much as I can get patients away from potentially harmful drugs onto safer substances like cannabis, I would say that I'm doing my job properly.
That's very interesting. Now, I'm presuming that people, if they're depressed, shouldn't be self-medicating themselves. They should be going to a physician. What's your attitude about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important that you go to a physician to review it. And depression is such a complicated a symptom, right, and disease, and it's easy to just think that you only have depression. But to me, I really try to treat patients holistically, and you can find out when you tease out when depression started. You can find out and you hear stories like, I was stressed at work, and then I didn't sleep well, and I haven't slept well for months, and then I had a death in the family. And so you really tease it out, and you find out that, well, the depression is probably a mix of some trauma, it's a mix of insomnia, it's a mix of stress. And so you have to kind of target all of those inputs and try to optimize those so that the output of mood is optimized. So it's so important that you have a good clinician who can listen to you and understand that, and then target all of those symptoms with both lifestyle and or medications to optimize your health.
Now, I understand, and I guess I've read about it, that women seem to be more prone to depression than men. What have you been finding out in your studies, and why is that, if that's so?
It's quite interesting, and I have seen data that does seem to suggest that women in general suffer more from mental health issues, particularly depression. I've also read studies that show that the cannabinoid system in males and females may be very differently, and the targets or the specific ingredients we use, such as CBD or THC, may have to be different for males or females. Unfortunately, we haven't studied this gender issue scientifically in our clinics, but from my experience, I would say I see a high proportion of middle-aged females that have a cluster of symptoms that include insomnia, stress, and pain. And you know, from my perspective as a cannabinoid expert, I would classify that their endocannabinoid system is not functioning properly. And so we tend to target it from the perspective of using CBD and THC to try to optimize it and see if we get better mental health outcomes.
That's very interesting. You know, I'm hoping that I know there's a new drug on the market. It's called esketamine. I'm hoping that maybe that will help people, you know, suffering from depression. But I'm really hoping that there will be more studies about how cannabis can also play a very positive role in alleviating this disease.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to helping generate the best quality science that we can so that we can give patients accurate information about what the risks and benefits are of a therapy and what to expect.
Well, thank you so much for shedding light on this important subject, and I really appreciate that you took the time to share your valuable information. Again, thank you.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Certainly. And folks, next week, we will be talking about glaucoma and cannabis with Dr. Richard Koffler. So please be sure to tune in. And to all of our cannabis healing listeners, thank you for being with us today. Please find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn just by searching Paxton Quigley. Please stay healthy and balanced and stay in touch. I'm Paxton Quigley.